Hey everybody, welcome to the third episode of GRCast. I'm in the studio today with a handful of people. We've got Matt.
Hello.
We've got Dio.
Hello, good to be back.
And in the revolving fourth chair, we've got Mr. Camel.
Hey there.
How's it going, fellas?
Pretty good, thanks, Joe.
It's alright.
Yep, everything's fine. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. I think we're going to kick this week off the same as we typically do with what you've been playing, and why don't we hear from Matt first?
Twice in a row. Okay. I've been playing two games again. The first is more Bioshock. I don't really know. I thought I was getting kind of close to the end, but I don't think I am now. I've just got to the bit where you have to take the pictures of the disciples for the guy, the artist guy. And that's a nice mission. I'm quite enjoying that. But it was just the mission that I did last was you have to get the thing for the mister. And it is basically an MMO quest. You have to go around and kill people and loot their bodies and find different ingredients for this, I forget the name of it, that goes into the mister and saves the trees in Arcadia. And it was such a lame mission that it's really nice to have gone on to a good mission now.
That one was a bit of filler, it kind of seemed like. But they made up for it, because that mission you do for that guy, Sander Cohen, I felt like he was great. I wish there had been more characters like him in the game.
Yeah, I mean, all the characters, the main characters that I've come across, are at least interesting. And their backstory is obviously built upon in the audio messages and that sort of thing. So it's like we were saying last week, you know, it's world versus gameplay. The reason that I got through that mission where you had to go around looting bodies and the like is because I knew that I was going to be rewarded with a little bit of character development. Even if I had to get through that mission and then do that stupid thing where there was waves of enemies attacking, it just seemed, like you say, it was filler.
Speaking of fillers, this kind of reminds me of this Mass Effect 1, where you basically you have to go on all... Who's played Mass Effect 1?
Yeah, it's a great game.
Well, two things turned me off from this game and the entire series. The first one was, you had to go to all these different planets and do like a mission everywhere, and then you get to a certain part of the game where somebody asks you to go at to every single planet again and do like another completely, like it's like repeating dungeons, which was kind of annoying when I got to it.
Yeah. All right.
And there the elevator waiting times.
Yeah.
Horrible.
There was a lot of that in Mass Effect, wasn't there? Where you'd go down to a random planet, and it was a nice idea that they just kind of copied and pasted over and over again so that they could up the length.
Yeah, there's the same kind of filler that... I don't know if it's the same as Bioshock, I haven't played it yet, but...
Don't say that on this podcast, I'll tell you. Joe will be after you for the next 4 years.
Yeah, that's terrible. Experience. There are more people in the world who have not played Bioshock 1. What the hell is wrong with you people?
It's still on my to-do list.
Oh, you've got a kindred spirit in Matt. His to-do list is like 18 years long.
I still got a lot of Pokemon games to catch up to as soon as I get a 3DS. So yeah, anyway, repeating dungeons, that kind of gets annoying. You know who else did it? Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, definitely.
That was incredibly annoying, where you had to, like, every single dungeon, as soon as you leave it, you have another mission there, and it's like you're fighting a completely different enemy or going through a completely different part of the story, but it's still the same, and you kind of know all the places where there are ambushes and stuff, and it just kind of got incredibly lame after the third time doing the same dungeon.
I just saw, I haven't actually played it yet, I just saw it on a review I've just edited for the new DLC for Metal Gear Revengeance. You play as Sam, I think his name is, and he's the vamp-like character that a lot of people thought was vamp when he was first revealed. And there's a DLC pack where you just play as him. And the review said something like that you went through the same locations and fought the same characters. That just seems insane that they would release a DLC pack. I know it was about the story, but to set it in the same locations just seems really cheap.
It saves some money, though. That's what games are all about. They're about making money, and they're just going to sell. Everyone's going to buy it anyway. They could come right out and say, "Ah, this is just recycled crap, but you know you want it." And everybody say, "Yeah, I do.
I want it, I'll admit." I read the review saying that it was repeated, and I
yeah,
thought,
I'd like to
you know
it.
What? I could put up with that. But, you know, talking of recycling things, this is a great
As a
segue.
whole, Revengeance was quite good.
Yeah, it was. It was very good. But talking of recycling, actually, it's a nice segue into the second game that I've been playing this week, which was Age of Empires 2 HD. Have any of you checked it out? Have any of you seen any of the reviews that have been going up?
Can't say that I have.
I knew it existed because I saw an article about it on our website. But other than that, I had no idea this was even a thing.
It is.
I watched the trailer for it, and it looks a lot like the same.
Yeah, it is exactly the same game as was released in 1999, basically, with the ability to put it into 1080p. They've upgraded the visuals a little bit. They've sorted out the netcode to a certain extent. I've heard a lot of people saying that that there's a lot of lag on the games, which there shouldn't be really in whatever year it is. I could have looked into the corner of the computer, but never mind. And, you know, I think, yeah, I'll talk for hours about games that came out 14 years ago, but if you ask me what year it actually is. So, yeah, it's a bit of a cash-in. They don't seem to have done a huge amount. They haven't polished anything up. I mean, you think that over the last 14 years, a lot of things have changed in what we take for granted in a game, and they've released it just as was. And it's disappointing that it's still such a great game, but then you come across so many shortcomings.
I feel like the RTS world has changed so much since that time. Like, when the original Age of Empires 2 came out, that was probably my favorite game. There's nothing like loading up like Genghis Khan or something and just going ape. But man, there's something about the historical, I don't know what you call it. It's not like accuracy necessarily, but it was just cool how each different faction had specific units tailored to the type of things they were great at in real life and everything. But yeah, that's not the kind of game I feel like really translates well to the modern age of RTS games.
My only real complaint in that regard is how slow it was. I mean, I cannot believe that I spent hours of my life waiting for a couple of guys to knock over a tower. You know, it literally takes 3 or 4 minutes. And I'm sitting there just watching the same animation over and over again, thinking, come on, fellas, you can do it. Go on, you've nearly got it. The flame animation start. Come on, you can do it. Keep going. Slightly more flame. Come on. 5 minutes later, they actually manage to knock it down, and then one guy comes along and kills all my units. But yeah, that's the only real complaint, that it is quite slow.
Meanwhile, in StarCraft, if you're playing against somebody really good, they could kill you with Zerglings in like 3 minutes from the beginning of a match, and it takes you longer than that to burn one building down in Age of Empires.
Yeah, I'm playing StarCraft 2 online, and I just did not fare well at all.
Yeah, because you always go against these hardcore players that literally memorize every single shortcut on the keyboard and just kind of overwhelm you. Because the way I usually play strategy games, maybe the most strategy game that I've ever played was Red Alert 2, and I could never multitask. So it was always like do one thing at a time, and that's where the online community really gets you, is that they can do like a billion things at the same time, build something and send troops over there, and it just gets so overwhelming that you just quit playing altogether.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is that, you know, there are times when I feel lucky not to have lost a single player game, you know what I mean? So it's more and more impressive that they can do the things that they can do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the people who are, like, professionals, it's absurd. It's not even a game anymore. It's not even fun. Like, when you get to the point where you're just basically going ape and clicking 1,000 times a minute and this is going there and, like, you're not even playing a game, really. You're just doing a job. You're, like, running an assembly line at high speed.
Develop carpal tunnel by the age of 21.
There's some whenever you get to the point where it's like you have to be very, very serious about it, like the type of people who can play fighting games and they know everything about every individual frame of an animation and they can cancel out of it by this point, and it's like, it's not fun to me anymore. I want to play the game. Once it gets to the point where it's like you have to be an expert of every little bit of minutia involved, I'm out. I'm not interested.
It gets to be a bit systematic in the end.
I think the problem is, Joe, that you use that as an excuse anyway. I remember when we was up against each other for trophies, and you lasted about a week before you started going, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I tried to like getting trophies, and I didn't. I can't force myself to do boring things for an imaginary reward. Call me crazy.
Well, the reward was beating me.
That is crazy.
It is the achievement thing that's going on in every single game today, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I guess, but...
Go on, mate.
They add some longevity to the game, some replay value. Like, the Dishonored trophies, for example, were a very good example of good trophies to get while still enjoying the game.
The only time that these rewards are negative is when they're online and, you know, it's like, I want to say it was Killzone and it's saying like play 2,000 matches and things like that. And there's going to be such a small percentage of people that do it that it's just not fun. I don't mind a challenging trophy, but if that trophy is going to mean that I'm going to have to do the same thing over and over again when I don't necessarily want to, that's when it gets boring. You know, and I mean, on the other hand, there's things like Metal Gear Solid 4, which got a trophy patch last year, and I played the hell out of that, and I got all but two trophies, and one of them requires, just one of these trophies requires that I play that game for about 40 hours or more. You know, I don't mind doing the big boss run or whatever, but the one run through that you have to do to get this icon is... you have to just play badly. You have to kill like 200 people. You have to take more than 40 hours or something. You've got to spend more than an hour in a box. You've got to spend more than an hour up against a wall. You have to die more than 200 times. And there just comes a point where you think, well, that playthrough, I'm not that crap of that game. I would have to try so hard to be that bad that it just is not worth the effort.
Just leave yourself in a dangerous area and then leave. Go out for the day, like come back 12 hours later and hope you've been killed and spotted whatever 1,000 times.
Yeah, but that's the real, that's the really hard bit because you've got to play it on like easy mode, I think. So there aren't any dangerous parts of the game.
So this is a trophy that they invented just to see who will sit around and be bored as much as possible just to get a trophy.
Yeah, some developers just tend to push trophies with the games just to increase the game's length in the worst possible way.
I think it's kind of a cheap way to add value. I mean, it's all right to have like achievements and trophies and stuff, but when you have them for every single little thing, then they just kind of lose meaning. I mean, I understand if you get a trophy for killing this super hard boss or... pulling off this kill where you have to, you know, do a certain condition, like kill an enemy while your health is under 10% and he's on fire or something. But, you know, and I used to be a World of Warcraft player, and when they introduced achievements in the game, like you get an achievement for buying your first mount. It's like, it's not really an achievement, is it? It's just buying your first mount. So... And they keep getting you at, like, all this little stuff that kind of makes achievements, kind of a nuisance. They're not really valuable.
I think a lot of people, I mean, I can only speak for myself and the kind of people that I interact with, but for me, I tend to see it as a progress. I think they've given it this huge name, achievements, trophies, you are being rewarded. Whereas for me, it's kind of like, I like to see how far my friends have got through the game. I like to see, okay, they didn't finish that bit, but they tried extra hard on the first level and collected everything. And maybe it's not a huge achievement, but for someone looking in at it and following your progress through the game, it's really handy and it's really interesting in a social setting as well.
Yeah, I guess I see the value in that, but I don't know, calling it an achievement and over-glorifying it is kind of lame.
I think the one that always gets me that was like the craziest achievement that I could think of was one where famously Matt and I, we used to have a website, we did a podcast together, and we reviewed Crackdown 2 together because playing that game co-op was the only way it was worth playing, and even then, only barely. But there was an achievement where it was something, I don't remember it exactly, but it was something like you had to blow up a certain amount of guys from the gunner seat of one of the, you know, vehicles while the vehicle was flying through the air and upside down. And I don't know how in the hell you would ever make that happen.
But the hilarious thing about that was you used to see it happen all the time. Like, you'd be just driving along and then you'd see another guy come round the corner and just going mad. Or did I imagine that? I swear I remember that. Joe, tell me I'm not going mad.
No, I think that happened. I'm sure that happened. Just seeing ridiculous things was the only good thing about that game, because otherwise that game was just a game about, basically, it was a glorified version of walking around your house and plugging in lamps.
There was one other great thing about that game, though, and that was there was a Colonel sound like. I don't remember if it was actually the same actor, but from MGS, the Colonel. And every time you did anything, talking of achievements, he'd say, "And that was an achievement." And it was just the most, because you felt epic. It didn't matter what you were doing, him going, "That was an achievement." It just made the game.
Congratulations on buying your first mount. That was an achievement.
You've just fallen 500 feet. That was an achievement.
You've just earned one gold coin. That was an achievement.
Yeah, somebody needs to make a World of Warcraft mod where that guy's voice just pops on anytime you get one of their easy achievements.
Yeah.
I feel like we probably had better move along on what you've been playing, or we're never going to get through everything. Why don't you go ahead, Camel?
Well, recently I've been playing two open beta games. First one is Path of Exile, which is a Diablo 2, what they call it, a port? Is that right? And it's basically a Diablo 2 with insanely good graphics, and it's got a few extra things. I haven't played Diablo 2 much, but it's a really interesting game. The moment you're thrown inside, it's like the environments are nice, the characters are nice, the animations are very smooth, so it's a game, an RPG that I would definitely recommend. And the second game I've been playing was Star Conflict, which is basically a flight simulator online team combat thing, where you get different kinds of ships, you upgrade them with your weapons, move on, like level up to different tiers where you can get better ships and with bigger guns.
I think I've seen something about that, because this kind of last generation, or at least the last 10 years, there hasn't been many space, I don't know what you call them, I wouldn't necessarily say simulators, but kind of driving games for spaceships, I suppose. I'm thinking kind of Jedi, there were some Star Wars ones, and
you're
X-Wing
of like,
and TIE Fighter.
Sort of. You're thinking of sort of like flight sims or something, where you like fly around and shoot things and upgrade your ship with new turbo lasers and forward shields and whatever, or what?
Yeah.
And the last one I remember playing was Star Wars Battlefront 2, the one where you can like pick up an X-Wing or a TIE Fighter and blow the hell out of people. It was a great multiplayer as well.
I quite like the Ratchet & Clank Crack in Time spaceship stuff, if anybody's played it.
I have, yeah. I mean, yeah, now that you come to mention it, it was that sort of thing, and perhaps that's where it'll end up popping up more and more in as kind of side games and a platformer. I'm trying to remember, there was a game that I played loads of, and it was on the PS2. It was Jedi Starfighter, it was called. And you could fly around space, and you'd fight whatever the hell the the prequel equivalent of the TIE fighters were as you was flying around, and you could use the Force from inside your spaceship. And that's the kind of thing that you don't see very often anymore, and perhaps with good reason, since the game was fairly bad.
Fair enough.
Some of those games were great, though. Like, I mean, well, maybe not. Maybe I'm just looking at it with rose-colored glass or whatever. But the Rogue Squadron games, I thought were great. Any of the, pretty much any of those type of games, where you're just like flying a ship around. Some of them, I mean, I always liked Star Fox when I was a kid, but I feel like the Rogue Squadron ones were more of a big open arena that you could kind of fly around in rather than just being on a rail.
I basically use those open arenas to crash. I don't know what you're talking about, this flying.
I think these kind of games are kind of hard to implement in a way, like the dogfighting, the mechanics of it. And what I like about Star Conflict is that you have this, it feels more like Battlestar Galactica, when you, like, has anybody seen that show?
Very little of it.
Yeah, well, the fighting is kind of like fast-paced and light, and you can, you know, get into dogfights easier than it is to, say, what was that game on PlayStation 3? Its name escapes me. It was Blazing Angels, I think, or something.
Oh, it's like a World War II one, isn't it, I think? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. No, it was one with, like, an F-16. And basically, you'd fly jets around and try to destroy. But it was too restrictive, even, like, in a terrestrial environment, you'd always end up crashing on the ground or going up into space and then, I don't know, blowing up or something. It was a really long time ago. Anyway, so that's what I like about it. You can hide behind asteroids. You can get into dogfights that are much more fun and engaging than just flying around randomly and shooting stuff and then crashing into the ground because you have no idea how to control your aircraft.
you've just described my gaming experience in those games.
That's news to me. This game sounds great, though. This game sounds grand. I want.
Oh yeah, it is. It is very great. I would highly recommend it. It's free to play for now, anyway, and they have this shop where you can buy items and stuff. But it's all like either aesthetic stuff or stuff you could get just by playing regularly. So it's kind of like a shortcut to pay the money. And there are three types of ships in this game. So you have your Interceptor, which is like the fastest and the weakest ship. And you have like your middle one, which is fast, not as fast as the Interceptor, but also has a bit more firepower. And it's called the Fighter. And then you have the Frigates, which are basically the slowest but the most powerful. And in a dogfight, the Interceptors kind of always win because they're the fastest. They can literally fly circles around any other ship. And there are three factions, and with each faction, you get its own special kind of model. They're called special modules, which are like special weapons you use for the Federation and the Interceptor. You get this warp engine which propels you in like 28 times your ship speed, so you can really cut through distances. And it can be really useful if you're chasing down someone like an enemy commander, or if you're trying to escape. So it just propel you so far away that nobody can reach you unless they have the same type of ship.
Huh.
Yeah, it's all very... I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it's a very nice game, and it has all these little things that you can do that just... I didn't know I could do that. That type of feeling.
That sense of discovery, I feel like, is lost in a lot of games, and it's always nice when you stumble on something where it's like, oh, I'm just discovering things on my own. They didn't have to tell me every little thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what kind of overwhelmed me at first is when I first logged in, they get you these tutorial screens, and they're just basically a giant wall of text, and I can never power through reading all of them because I end up forgetting it anyway or just dozing, like daydreaming while I read them, and then So I just close them and go to discover the whole interface by myself. And but in most games that I see, especially free-to-play ones, they have this really bad interface that you can't make heads or tails of it. But this one was actually easy to figure out. You could get to all the important stuff, and if you dig a little deeper, you could find like the more hidden, the hidden underbelly. I wouldn't say easy, but it has an okay learning curve, and especially for the interface where it's well done and easy to figure out.
Awesome. Hey, some people listening to this might actually be excited to hear about a game they haven't heard about and go play it now, rather than just hearing about the same old crap everyone's been playing all the time.
Yeah, I'm all about the free-to-play games because I'm kind of cheap.
We probably better move it along to Dio. What have you been playing this week?
As a PS Plus member benefit, I got Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward on the Vita. Has anybody played it?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
It is absolutely brilliant. It's sort of like a graphic, a visual novel, I guess, with elements of Escape the Room puzzles.
No, it's kind of a sequel to, was it called 999 or something? Nine people, yeah. Nine rooms, something?
Yeah, nine people, nine rooms, and nine hours for the DS, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't played that one. I saw that it was better to play the first one. You get more of a backstory and everything. But the puzzles are just so insanely ingenious, and the sense of accomplishment you get when you solve a way to exit the room is absolutely amazing. And then there's the Schrodinger's cat and the prisoner's dilemma that are implemented into the mechanics of how you survive. You basically have this watch, and you're either paired with somebody or you're on a solo team. Once this happens, each pair has a shared destiny and the solo people have their own. And after you escape each room, you enter these six rooms. And you're given the choice to either betray or ally the person that you worked with, because people were separated into three groups of three people. And if you choose to ally, and the other person that you went into the room with chooses to ally as well, you both get positive points. You need to get to 9 points on the watch in order to escape. So the question is, do you betray them and get more points if they ally with you, or do you ally with them and risk losing points because they betrayed you? It's a lot of philosophical just conundrums packed into one game, and the mechanics of the escape rooms are just brilliant.
That sounds awesome. And it's free on PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that does sound fantastic. Quite good. Huh. I would always betray.
Amazing, yeah.
My default stance is betray everyone.
Survival of the fittest.
Exactly.
You know, in all the games where you have like these morality decisions, stuff like Fallout where you have the karma meter or something, I always, my thinking always goes, okay, this game was basically made for me, so I can do whatever I want. But in the end, I feel sorry for the little digital guys. And like, oh, I don't wanna be a dick. You know? I don't wanna be like this guy who just like randomly kills people and then gets the bad karma meter. And then I always go the other way and say, well, I don't want to be like this goody two shoes either. So I end up staying exactly in the middle, no matter what I do. My decisions at the end of the game always end up like if there's a karma meter like in Fallout, it always end up like straight in the middle. I'm neither good nor bad, and I never get like the good followers or the bad companions. So I end up losing in the end.
I always find that the karma meters in those things are just so annoying. So obvious. You know, you come to any given situation, oh, there's a woman who's passed out in an alleyway. Do you want to help her get home and feed her and make sure she's okay, or do you want to rape her? And it's going to go one way or another, and it's always so obvious.
I have found
sometimes you even lose. Go on.
I've found that it's strange because there's in all these different things you can make the choices. You know, do you want to be the good guy or the bad guy? And most of the time, I have no problem. Like in Fallout, the way I solve every situation is I crouch behind them, I go into stealth mode, I target their head with a shotgun, and soon their head disappears in a red mist, and it doesn't bother me at all. And then I steal everything that's not nailed down, and then I laugh all the way back to the store where I sell it, or to my makeshift home somewhere where I just drop it and look at it like it's a trophy. But then, in Bioshock Infinite, this isn't a spoiler, it was in previews, one of the first things that happens, there's no meter, there's nobody tracking whether you do something good or bad, there's no punishment or reward, depending on, but one of the first things you do is you get to a raffle where they give you a baseball, and they bring out an interracial couple who's tied up, and you win, so you get to throw the baseball at them first, and it says, do you want to throw the baseball at the interracial couple, or do you want to throw it at the announcer? And I could not throw it at the interracial couple. I couldn't do it. I've killed a million people. I mean, I've set bombs. My favorite thing to do in Fallout New Vegas was to stealth plant C4 in someone's pocket and then wait until they walked into a crowd and then blow it up, killing everyone. And I would just laugh. But I couldn't throw that baseball at those people. I don't know what it was.
I can understand why your wife doesn't want you playing Infinite in front of your kids.
So maybe it's just because that's like... that's more of a real situation to me or something. Obviously, I'm never going to have a chance to put C4 in someone's pocket and blow a bunch of people up. I would not be interested in doing that. But, I don't know, there's something so weird. It feels so wrong to me to press the button to try and throw the baseball at that couple. I couldn't do it. And I choose the evil choice in everything just because it's there. I don't know. I'm softening in my old age now.
I'll just take it.
I guess these like good or bad meters always felt like an in-game Santa Claus. It's like he watches everything you do, and he can tell if you're naughty or nice. And
yeah, but the reward for being evil is so much better.
Well, in Star Wars, like the Knights of the Old Republic, it was kind of better. You'd get like the better Jedi skills, like the lightning and the. And for being good, you'd get all these healing spells, which you never use, because who the hell plays a healer in an RPG game that's not online? So.
Right. Yeah, and Knights of the Old Republic, I was all about the Force choke. I had to go dark side.
Yeah, and the Force lightning, that was epic.
Yeah, Force lightning is amazing.
I think you also, as a bad guy, got a skill where you could suck the life out of enemies and heal yourself. So all those heal spells the good guys got were pointless. The only thing they got was that they could, like, kill a robot just by giving it a dirty look or something. And it was like, eh, who cares?
Who can't do that?
Yeah, I think that in games, especially RPGs, the good guys get the short end of the stick most of the time. And I always kind of end up going for the good side, so...
Yeah, Infamous is another example of this. You just get to play as a mass murderer with that red / black lightning at the end of the game, which is just fucking amazing to look at. And then the good guy just has a couple of grenades he throws. I'm just underrating the game, but the good part of the game, but yeah.
Bored. Yeah, sure. Forget that guy. Just throw grenades and blow up everyone. Blow up cars. If I kill one bad guy, it doesn't matter if I killed 1,000 good ones. That's my stance video game mods.
So I think last week, Joe, you shared a bit of a childhood dream with us, and I think this week you lived that childhood dream. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, that segues nice into what I've been playing, which is I didn't play anything at all the entire week until last night when Matt said, you know what you should do is you should try Toe Jam and Earl, which I promptly did. For people who don't know, if you didn't listen last week, first of all, go download it. Second of all, I said last week that when I was a child, I had purposely convinced my parents to get me a Genesis because of how badly I wanted to play Toe Jam and Earl for some reason, and I never did. I never played it until last night when Matt said, download this game, try it out. So I did, and it almost makes me regret getting a Genesis at all. I wish I could go back in time and not get one. What? There was one thing I thought was really interesting, and that is that I feel like you mentioned that game last week, Matt, and you had said that when you played it, you thought, this isn't the game I thought it was. What is going on here? This is like, that was the same thing that happened to me. I loaded that game up, and it's some weird, it's almost like an RPG or something. I'm walking around on an overworld map, and it's almost an isometric view or something, and I'm sitting there going, I would swear that this game is supposed to be a 2D platformer. Is that what you thought it was supposed to be?
That is, yes. There is a conspiracy here.
Yeah, what is going on? I have these vivid memories of seeing those two characters on a 2D plane jumping around on, like, alien planets or something. And that is not what that game is at all. I mean, not even close. It couldn't be more different.
You know, it amazed me that I found someone else that actually wanted to play Toe Jam and Earl, but this is just creepy. There is something going on here. We had the same memory of the game that didn't exist.
We've always been basically the same person. I feel like I must be your evil twin from America.
Yeah. I'm the classy one.
Yeah. Well, because you're British, there was no contest. I was doomed from the start.
Yeah.
So what exactly is this game? Because I haven't heard of it before. And what does it have to do with your dreams coming true or something?
Basically, I had spent all this time as a kid. When my parents finally got the Genesis, every week we would go to the rental store and I would hope to find a copy and it would always be checked out. And so over the past 20 years, I've often thought of this game like, I wonder if I should play it. Maybe I should play it or something just to see. It was the whole reason I bought that Genesis, and I had never, ever played it. I'd never had the opportunity. And now I sort of regret having the opportunity. I wish Matt had never brought it up. My memory of, like, the commercial of that game was far better than the actual product was.
Wow.
It was nice. When you start the game,
just destroying dreams.
When you start the game, you've got it's sort of like a little status meter in the bottom or whatever where it says, I chose to play as Toe Jam. And there's just a little message at the bottom that says, Toe Jam is a wiener. And I thought, this is really classy right here. I don't know why that was there. I don't understand the point of it. It was just, I walked around a map, and as far as I could tell, I could not fight any enemies. They would just run at me and stab me with like a pitchfork or something, and then I would kind of hobble away. And at one point, for no real reason, there was a Hawaiian hula dancer, and when I got too close, my guy just started hula dancing randomly. And I think it was some sort of distraction trick, because then all the enemies charged at me and started trying to poke me as I was hula dancing and I couldn't move. And, it was bad.
Wow.
It sounds pretty bad.
Like a game I'd like to play, though.
You should.
Yeah, I would like to try it.
Try. If you can last more than the, like, 20 minutes that I lasted, I will give you an internet trophy or something. I'll print you a page and send it. I'll send it with a digital voice message that says, this is an achievement.
Coming up next week on the GR cast, everyone gives their opinion on a 20-year-old game.
the Toe Jam and Earl hour.
Where everyone's a wiener.
Speaking of announcers, this is an achievement. Has anybody played the Dota port called Han, Heroes of New Earth?
Yes,
I have.
Yeah. I gotta admit, they've done a pretty awesome job with the announcers, because I haven't seen any game do anything like it. There might have been, but I haven't noticed them. So basically, for those who haven't played the game, you can buy different kinds of announcers with the in-game currency that you get from winning matches and stuff. And they keep adding new announcers every once in a while, and they have these awesome announcers like Duke, the guy who voices Duke Nukem. He does, like, whenever you get a kill streak, he'd go like badass or something similar. And they have this posh Victorian British guy. so it really makes you want to like it makes you enjoy the game more. It's something I'd really like to see more games do. Games with like multiplayer games with announcers.
You know the best thing about Heroes of Noob, yeah, I think, as opposed to Dota or League of Legends, I've yet to come across a single player that's fucked my mum. I've been in all these games, and I'll tell you what, I had no idea the things she gets up to.
Apparently online, everybody's mother gets fucked by everyone, so...
I don't know where this is going down. I'm completely up for it, mother swapping, but so far, I'm unaware of where it happens.
We're just a generation of people with very trampy mothers, I think. It must be what it is.
It's the sexual revolution. Moms just want to have fun, huh?
Ugh, I don't like
I think
the direction this is going.
The only thing I actually...
Yeah. Awkward.
Go ahead, Dio. You were going to say something probably
important.
The only
thing I actually enjoyed... I think the only thing I actually enjoyed from Heroes of New Earth were the announcers themselves, because I'm so bad at that game. I can play League of Legends and Dota 2, which I've played recently, but just Heroes of New Earth just keeps on messing around with me. It's terrible.
You know what I really don't like about this game is the lack of feedback you get from your avatar or your character while you play. So you could be clicking around, you're in the middle of a fight, and then you die, and you don't even notice that you're dead. You just keep on clicking, and then like 5 seconds later, you realize, oh, I'm dead.
No, I die so much, I can notice when I'm dead.
No, it's kind of like the lack of feedback you get from the game, like, I don't know, the screen blacking out when you die, like in League of Legends, or, you know, you get some kind of response.
Yeah, that lets you know what's going on
because sometimes it can get so crowded and like the battles can move and you like to the corner of the screen and it's just visually so distracting that you can't even keep track of like which character are you. So it's kind of nice to have that bit of feedback so that you know, oh, I'm dead, or oh, I'm, you know.
I think League of Legends has done.
User disconnected from your channel.
Oh.
Oh, we lost Dio there. I think the whenever I play any of these MOBA games, like no matter what it is, it could be League of Legends, it could be Dota, like any of them, as soon as I see another player coming, like if I'm going down the thing, I'm helping my little bots out, I'm like, yay, we're attacking a tower. As soon as another player from the other team is coming, I just assume I'm about to be dead. I don't even need the feedback from the game.
It sounds like you play these games well.
No, that is that the impression I'm giving here? Because that's not the case. they're games that I would like to be good at. But once again, I feel like it's one of those things where if you're going to be really good, it's going to have to be a job, like a chore, instead of just being a fun game to play. I have fun games to play, friends.
Yeah.
I feel you're going to say something before you disconnected.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I pressed the D button by accident. I think League of Legends has done a very good job incorporating the fact that you've received hits, and it shows very distinctly and clearly that you have taken damage, and what damage you deal, etc.
Yeah, that's why I prefer League of Legends over Han, although Han is a bit more challenging in a sense, like the gameplay and I think like League of Legends is kind of an easy mode version of the Dota or the MOBA genre.
Yeah.
Where Han is like a bit hardcore, though not as hard. Well, and Dota 2 is like in the middle.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I feel like we should make a Dota team. We'd be the worst Dota team ever, but we'd have fun.
Yes.
It's true. I think that should happen. What we should do, here's what I want to just say, that I think Heroes of New Earth is the greatest game of all time. And the reason I say that is because I only live like about an hour and a half away from the headquarters of the guys who make that game, and I really want to be invited there. I'd love to do a story about what's going on at S2 Games. If anybody from S2 Games is listening, Joe Ryan thinks Heroes of New Earth is fucking great. Come on, get me down there. I want to see what you're working on.
Best game in the universe.
And thank you for protecting our moms.
Yes.
Wow. Toe Jam and Earl. We got Heroes of New Earth discussion where I'm trying to sell my soul just to visit a game developer. This is a great week.
Why don't you just go to the front door and just knock and say, can I pop in?
I've thought about that.
Casually.
He's done it every night for weeks. Nothing yet. He just stands outside tapping on the glass.
In the rain.
Out in the rain, just look. Knocking and looking sad. No. Well, wow. Maybe you could do it in a fake British accent so they think you're coming from far away. Have Matt give you a lesson. Hello, governor.
Hello, mate. I'd like to come into your place of work and have a look around, if you don't mind.
Then we could probably have some tea, all right?
I feel this is bordering on racist.
Well, it would be if English was a race.
Oh, he just wrecked your shit with science. Oh, man. We are well off topic here, but that's kind of what we do. That's kind of our thing. I know, Dio, you wanted to bring up the new Pokemon stuff. Why don't you hit that up? Because I am hopelessly lost when it comes to new Pokemon information.
Ooh, I love Pokemon.
Yeah, okay. Basically, as I did the new story on the new Pokemon, the new in bright and speech bubbles Pokemon, because it just looks so much like a mixture between Mew and Mewtwo, and so much of the Pokemon lore from the first movie especially has just hinted towards it being possibly Mew 3, and either a different evolution form or something completely new altogether. Because like I stated, with the Pokemon names have been named X and Y, which could be related to the sex chromosomes in the human genome. So by doing that and not having confirmed that the lab that Mewtwo originated in and survived the cloning process was destroyed, that was never actually confirmed by Nintendo and Game Freak and people who do the anime, I guess. And could definitely, and the clear omission of the name, because they revealed the Pokemon, everything, we saw it was a psychic type, and they clearly did not show us the name for a reason, which is likely to be that it's got the name Mew inside it. So it could very well possibly be Mew 3, which I'm really excited about.
I'm really excited for the next Pokemon games as well, because I hear the story is going to be fantastic. Apparently, it starts off in a small hick town, and you have to pick from one of three Pokemon. And then you go on an exciting journey where you collect Pokemon, but you come across the evil Team Space Term, who is trying to use Pokemon for evil. And then you eventually beat them and go and see the Elite Four, and they're not that difficult. It's going to be fantastic. Groundbreaking stuff.
Really looking forward to that.
Breakthrough. But, it's like, where do they come up with this stuff? Every year it's something completely unheard of.
God, this just made me sad, this conversation.
Yeah. But it's a great portable game, I have to say that. Whenever I'm in a waiting room somewhere or on a bus, I always have my Pokemon with me. Although I've been lagging behind because I still haven't bought a DS. So I haven't played the new versions, which I really want to do. It's they're always handy, because not only is it not a senseless game or an arcade game, which is like Fruit Ninja or stuff, where you basically do the same shit over and over and over and over again with no real point. There's kind of like a bit of development in there. You have like your story and the Team Rocket or Team, like the last version I played was the Sapphire version with the mm-hmm. Team Aqua. It's kind of nice having a bit of continuity, and that's why recently I've been trying to buy or trying to look for retro games for the Game Boy, like the Final Fantasies of the Game Boy, but they're extremely hard to find because no big surprise, they're not in production anymore. So
yeah, I still have my little yellow Pikachu following me around on my Pokemon Yellow on the Game Boy.
Yeah, and I kind of prefer like the portable consoles to mobile phones because simply because touch screens are just not fun, especially for a guy with big fingers. So I'd have to like.
If you're a guy with big fingers, you haven't got time for mobile gaming. Your fingers are needed elsewhere.
Well, I know one part I can definitely cut. The editing just got a little easier today, folks.
Yeah.
I know at the beginning of this Pokemon discussion, Dio said something about Pokemon lore, and my brain went, I'm not sure this is information that's relevant to me. I didn't know that Pokemon had lore until he said that. I love those games as a game where I walk around in tall grass, and in doing so get attacked by small creatures, which I might want to enslave.
And then use them for dog animal fighting, basically.
Yes, that's what I like to do. I play that game as though I'm playing it as an evil character, even though that's not an option.
Pokemon Tyrant Joe Ryan.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what do you have to do in this universe to be evil, since everybody's running around and having animal fights. So everybody's kind of evil if you think about it. You have enslaved creatures that you use for fighting and violence and entertainment, and then like what do Team Rocket do? They steal those guys, but you already steal them from the wild. So
yeah, but they want to be stolen.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. They have Stockholm syndrome.
Every Pokemon's looking for a nice home with a nice owner.
Yeah, they're out in the cold. They're afraid of the elements. They could be eaten by other wild Pokemon at a moment's notice. They need to get in that Pokeball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought there should be an option in that game where if you lose to another trainer, you can just punch them in the mouth. Because I feel like there's no physical violence between trainers in this world. It would really throw them off.
Or maybe if your Pokemon, if your Pokemon lose the battle, they'd have to commit the Japanese suicide thing.
Sure, that would not make for a fun game.
That would make for an epic game.
That's a way that some people play that game. If you ever look up the Nuzlocke challenge on the internet, it's a challenge where people play Pokemon games, and if there's a bunch of different rules. I think you're not allowed to use healing items. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you run into in an area, and if you fail to catch it, it passes out, or you just can't catch it, it runs away or something. You're not allowed to catch one in that area, and when one of your Pokemon faints, it's dead, and you have to release it, and you have to try and beat the game that way.
Oh, wow, that is tough.
It's very tense. It's fun, though. It's super fun, but
yeah,
it's
but
very
if you...
tense.
If you white out in like the Elite Four in the last battle, then you lose all of your high level Pokemon and then you have to like start over. Oh my god, I'm totally gonna do that. It sounds awesome.
That would be a nice accomplishment for trophy or an achievement.
That would
or something.
Be an achievement.
A hardcore mode Pokemon.
Like people would go for that. I mean,
it reminds me of this thing that people used to do with the God of War games on the PS2, where they'd play the game, but they wouldn't put any points into anything. And that's basically their, like, the fan-made hardcore mode. I don't know exactly if they did that way, or they did, like, they picked only one weapon to level up. But basically, yeah, that's what they do. They wouldn't put any orb, the red orb, the things that you used to upgrade your weapons with, into anything at all, and then they just play through the game that way and apparently beat it, and it has to be like on the hardest setting, like I think it's like, yeah, the hard mode. So but I never got people who did this because yeah, sure, I don't know if it's fun or not, but I don't know, I just hate dying in a game and just repeating stuff in it. Eventually I'll just get frustrated and leave it and go do something else.
Yeah, that sounds tedious.
Yeah, it just seems like you're making the game too hard for no specific reason, just so you can brag about it later.
Yeah, and the newest God of War game, Ascension, has this one part where it's called, I think, Archimedes' Trial, was it?
Yeah, that sounds
right. Something
like
that. And it's about 4/5 through the game, just right before you get to the end. And it's just they patched it now, thank God. But relating back to achievements and stuff, it took me so long to beat It took me so long. I was up here for 3 hours just going on and on and on and going, getting to the final bit and then just running out of those sweet, sweet green orbs. It was just painful doing it at least 20 times. But it feels really satisfying now that I have gotten the achievement, the trophy, before the patch was released. That's something you could brag about a little, maybe.
They should take that trophy off.
I think that's
off
why
now.
I have...
Now that it's patched, they shouldn't let people get it. It should just be like, if you got it,
yes,
work hard,
you earned
it. Yes, I
completely agree with that. Exactly.
Or maybe give you like a golden dragon trophy.
A gold star.
That's extra shiny. A banana sticker. Yeah, I guess that's why my tolerance for like these really hard games has always been so low. Like Dark Souls, about the game, and I'm still at the very beginning. I just can't power through it because it gets so frustrating sometimes that I just end up quitting and doing something else.
I actually want to talk about Dark Souls for a minute. This is sort of relevant because they just announced Dark Souls 2 and everything. Here's my complaint about Dark Souls. I really like Demon's Souls. I really like Dark Souls. I had a good time with what I played of it, which wasn't a lot. And I appreciate the difficulty. Everything about that game I think is so cool. It seems like such an achievement when you beat a boss or whatever. But the thing that's frustrating is when I am playing single player, I mean, I have satellite internet. It's terrible. So I just purposely put it so that other people can't invade my game. You know, I do use none of the online features, which some people will say defeats the purpose, but whatever. Why can't I pause it? That I feel like pausing does not somehow lend me some sort of advantage. I have children. Like, I loved playing that game so much, but I would get to a boss, and those bosses are difficult. They take a while to beat. It's not like you just run in and you kick their ass and move on like some games. I could get 3/4 of the way through killing a difficult boss, and then one of my kids gets upset, and continuing to fight that boss is not an option. So I try to pause the game, and nothing happens. He just walks over and stomps on me until I die, and it's like, okay, well... Now I have to start that all over again, and this time maybe I get halfway through fighting the boss before one of my kids needs something, and it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to get stomped to death again. What is it about pausing that they think confers some supernatural advantage to me playing my single-player game?
Didn't the Xbox button work?
I have no idea.
About to try that.
Because it negates this conversation a little bit.
That would be frustrating. I played it on PS3. Would it work the same way? I have no idea. If it does, that would be frustrating.
Maybe.
Even so, that seems stupid. Why? I don't understand why you would be able to pause it that way, but not the regular way.
It was an intelligence puzzle, Joe, and I'm afraid you failed.
Yeah, well,
Dark Souls.
Not a surprise.
Gets the best
friends.
Of you.
If you were in the jungle, you'd win the Darwin Award.
I think I beat like maybe 3 or 4 different bosses on that game, and most of those I got through while my kids were like asleep or something, because it was like, this is just frustrating. And I complained to everyone who would listen, but nobody cared that I was complaining, so it's not like I had anybody to complain to who was like in a position to change this. If Dark Souls 2 can be paused, I will buy it on day one. Well, you got $60 out of my pocket, just let me pause the game. Confirm that pressing that middle button will pause it, and I'm there.
So let's talk about the always-on thing with the Xbox.
We touched up on it last week, didn't we?
A little bit.
I still don't fully understand it. So could you like explain? Give me like the Reader's Digest version of what it's all about.
So I think.
Go ahead, man. You can probably know better than I do at this point.
The basic premise of the rumor was that you are going to constantly need a connection to do anything on the next Xbox. The idea was that if you played a game, you had 3 minutes before that game cut you out. 3 minutes of offline time before it cut you out. You can't load up the console or anything without first connecting to a server and making sure that you're not running some sort of weird, I don't know, why would you even need to connect to a server just to get to the operating system? I can't think of any reason why that would be a security plus, you know.
Except maybe anti-piracy stuff.
Well, I suppose if you'd actually modified the console, I suppose so, yes. But I suppose if someone had put in so much time where they'd modified the base hardware that they'd probably have to make modifications to the software anyway. I mean, I don't know, because I've never even looked into modifying a console before, but it doesn't seem to me that it seems to me that the problem would be playing the games perhaps more than getting to the operating system. But I don't know. But there's been other rumors this week that actually there's been a lot of confusion, and that the next Xbox is literally going to be an Xbox. It's going to be a Xbox 360 that requires you be online all the time. But if you do that, then you get the console's like £60, $99 is the new rumor. But it seems convenient. It seems like it's a rumor to deal with the last rumor.
I don't know, but if they are doing it for anti-piracy, I've always noticed that the game industry in trying to deal with piracy, they tend to punish the players who actually buy the games.
That's very true.
Yeah, so whether it be requiring you like 14 different logins in order to get to your games, or always being connected online or stuff like that, they always tend to punish the people who actually have accounts instead of the people who like download the game from and crack it or whatever. So that if it is, I'm not sure if this online thing is the always online thing is true, or even if it is, it's for anti-piracy purposes. But if it is, then it's kind of showing how the industry is basically fighting the people who buy the games and not really doing anything about the people who there. It's like a minor inconvenience for the people who are actually gonna break into the games, and just annoying for the people who actually go through with buying the game, and maybe pushing some of those honest gamers outside of pushing them towards obtaining the game and piracy.
You know, I wrote an article about this a couple of weeks ago with the whole SimCity thing before these rumors came out, and basically the only real conclusion that I can come to, there was huge anti-software piracy campaigns in the 80s and perhaps even towards the late part of the 70s, certainly the 80s. So more or less anyone that is now becoming a game developer, or at least started out in the late 90s, 2000s, they would have been young enough to see all of this anti-piracy brainwashing, basically, it was. Because you look at the adverts and there's a clear good guy, the guy that's not pirating, and then there's a bad guy, the guy that is. So this isn't a new problem. It's been going kind of 30, maybe 40 years to a certain extent. And you kind of start to realize how deep the problem is when you start looking back. If this is one reaction to it, but these developers, it's not just a case of not wanting to lose money to the pirates. They want to destroy piracy. And Diablo 3 and SimCity has proven that always on DRM works, though that destroys piracy.
Well, I don't think you can destroy piracy, because you can't fight against a certain idea or practice, more or less.
You're right, generally, because generally not everyone's going to do always on DRM because it pisses people off. But those games haven't been pirated yet.
Yeah, but how successful were they?
Very.
And also, it's not uncommon to hear about people playing or illegally downloading Diablo 3 and playing it.
Yeah, but it's a bit watered down, isn't it? It's not the full experience. You can't get the full experience without buying.
I don't know. I haven't played Diablo 3.
Yeah.
For the mere fact that I've heard so many bad reviews about it.
There are ways of playing, but you have to connect through private servers, is my understanding of it. And then a lot of the online functionality that was built in onto Blizzard side of things, you kind of miss out on, I think. Which maybe it depends how deep it goes. Maybe it's playable to a certain extent. But my understanding is that you can't properly play these games unless you've bought a copy.
I mean, on the note of piracy itself, I think the industry really has to change in order to cope with something like that, because there's always going to be piracy, and whenever the game industry will come up with the next new gimmick or security feature, there's always going to be somebody who's going to be able to get around it. So what I've the conclusion that I've kind of came up to is that the gaming industry should start shifting more into a free-to-play model with like the shop for buying, because people really do buy this stuff. You go into League of Legends, it's a free-to-play game, but you find people who buy champions because they don't want to grind for them, or they buy skins, stuff like that. So I think that should be where game developers head in the future. I don't know.
I think there's a term, and I absolutely hate this term. It's anti-consumer, and it is just 90% of the people that use it are using it in a completely arrogant, self-centered way, and it pisses me off. But any practice that charges them for things they think they should get free, or that puts limitations on how they can play, they see as anti-consumer. And until people can get over that attitude, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to be able to you're not going to be able to do more DLC, because people will just, you know, there was a bit removed from Mass Effect 3 that was a level they never got to do, where I forget who you played alongside. It was the Asari from that kind of criminal planet in the second game. But you played alongside her, and it was meant for the full game, but they didn't have the time for it. So they released the game and then finished it and released it probably 6 to 8 months after release. And people still said that that should have been in the base game, that they should never have released it as DLC. And when people are arguing that, there is just no way that having DLC or microtransactions is a good solution, because people are seeing it as bad as doing always on DRM in some ways.
I think that there are a lot of people, especially with that DLC stuff, who for some reason they live in this fantasy land where if DLC was not possible, everything that later comes out as DLC would automatically just be included. It's like they think that they build a whole game, and then they go through with a surgical laser and remove the parts they think might be worth paying for. And in some cases, that's probably true. I mean, there are some shady places that probably do that. But in a lot of things, like BioShock Infinite is a complete game. Everything there, it's worth the money. Like, it's a fantastic experience. But there's going to be 3 DLC packs, and you cannot tell me that if the DLC wasn't a thing, that those packs would have just been included in the game. Like, it's legitimately going to be something extra. You know it is.
You know, I think people have to start to realize that DLC is a thing, and that the gaming industry isn't especially profitable, and that they're using DLC to try and make it so that they can continue to make these great AAA games. Because at this point, I kind of get the feeling that any smart developer or publisher is focusing more on mobile games, where it costs, like, I don't know, 10 grand to make a game, and they've made it back in a week with some decent marketing. You know, I feel like that's the smart thing that they should be doing. And a lot of these publishers aren't doing that. They're trying to focus on AAA titles. They're putting millions into them. They're really trying hard. And the way that they're trying to find to make that profitable is through DLC and through microtransactions. And I feel that's just something that we have to accept at this point. You don't have to buy it, but you have to accept that this is just something that has to happen, or else these companies won't be able to make money sometimes. Sometimes, literally, they won't be able to make money on a game.
Definitely. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, it's... I think in the end, we have to like appreciate that these developers are working hard. They do... This is their job, and they should get paid for it. Even... if for no other reason than just to produce the next good game. But it kind of bullying with the internet, which a lot of, like, with the movie industry and the gaming industry have kind of been lagging behind. Because with the internet, that means why should I... It's basic common sense or game theory. Why should I pay money for something I can get for free extremely easy? So... I think that's the way most people think of it, and not particularly in a sense of I'm stealing.
Yeah, definitely.
But, so they should try to cope with, because that's the reality of it. If you have something that's free and you don't actually go to trouble, you don't go to like a back alley and buy a bootleg from this game from a shady person, then people are going to do it. So they have to figure out ways to cope with it. Maybe through microtransactions or... Yeah, the annoying part about DLC is when they release the game that is not complete, and then you have to complete the game with DLC. Sounds kind of like what happened with Mass Effect, is that the game itself, the base game, was incomplete, and in order to complete the game, you have to buy the DLC. But in a game like Skyrim, you already buy the full game. It's a complete standalone game. You don't need DLC to like finish the story and play through it. And then the DLC just adds stuff later on, which is, I think that's the main concern in the gamer community, is that if you release on purpose a game that is incomplete and expect people to pay later for DLCs, which, so you basically make them pay for a full game when you give them like a half a game, and then make them pay more for the rest of the game as they go along.
Sounds a lot like
conspiracy theory.
Colonial Marines. yeah, that game was not the best of games, and I think they're going to try push a lot of DLC in order to make up for any losses in profit and try to promote the game a little better than make it slightly, at least slightly better than it already is.
But you know what? If there are people willing to pay more for that game, then Gearbox deserve absolutely everything they get.
Yeah,
you have very good points. Yeah, Bug Hunt DLC. Has anybody played that?
No, I've not even played the game.
The new, yeah, I haven't. I didn't even bother.
Which game are we talking about again?
Aliens: Colonial Marines.
I haven't played it.
Gearbox probably hates us now.
Probably.
I do love Borderlands though, so I think that franchise is off the charts. I love it.
Agreed. I'm a big Borderlands fan as well. Anyway, I feel like we could probably go on about DLC and stuff for ages. so Matt, I'm sure it'll come up again, especially with the whole always on Xbox thing. And as the rumors continue to come out, we'll probably be breaking it down more. But for this week, I think we probably better wrap it up. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Pleasure's all mine.
Cheers, mate.
All right. We will see you next week with another episode of GRCast. We're out.